Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Welcome, everyone. This is Gretchen Hochmeister from the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon, Connecticut, and I am joined by Tammy Gaskill, the director of the Rolif Jansen Library in Hillsdale, New York, which serves the towns of Ancrum, Copaic, and Hillsdale. Today, we are going to be talking about the history of our institutions. No, they're probably very different, but equally fascinating. I'm curious to learn about how three towns learned or started to work together, Tammy, and to form a library. So why don't you start us off today?
Okay, well, our library actually started out serving just one town. That's the town of Hillsdale, and it was called the Hillsdale Library. It began in 1913, but it didn't have a permanent home, really, until 1925. When we received a bequest from Flavia Bristol to build a library. And they built a building, a small brick building right on the main street in Hillsdale on Route 23. And the library was there from 1925 until 2010. The library was rechartered and renamed. It was renamed Rolif Jansen Community Library to reflect the fact that it now was serving three towns, Copaic and Ancrum, sort of the three towns in the southeast corner of the state, of the county. And we're right along the Rolif Jansen Kill, which gives the name to the area. By the late 20th century, the board had decided that the building that we had was too small, and it really was. If you see pictures of that building, it was just crammed with books. There were a lot of books that still are on our shelves that are marked storage because they had to be, there just wasn't enough space in the library, and they were in storage in the basement. There was really no programming space of any kind, so they knew it was time they needed to build a bigger library. They also wanted to move it to a more central location now that we were serving three towns. Hillsdale is northernmost of those towns. So they wanted to move it a little further south to be a little closer to the center of our service area. So they were fortunate in being able to purchase a large tract of land. We're located on 9 acres of land surrounded by park. We have the Rojan Park across the street from us. We have the rail trail, Harlem Valley Rail Trail behind us, and lands of the Taconic State Park. So we're really in the middle of a beautiful setting with the Rojan Kill along our eastern border. So the library building at the late 20th, early 21st century was a time of change in library architecture, I think. Libraries were becoming more than quiet repositories of books, but really community centers. They wanted flexible spaces for programming. So that is reflected in our design. Originally, they planned a very, very large library, 12,000 square foot library. But during site selection, the footprint was limited, and it's now 7,500 square feet, which is still a pretty large building. It is a big open space, so it's flexible design. It does have its drawbacks in that it can be noisy at times, but it's also a flexible space that can be rearranged as needed. It's very light. This was also a time of more environmental consciousness in buildings. So we are a very green building. We are geothermal heated and cooled. We have lots of natural light and windows facing to the south and west. We have solar panels on the southern-facing roof. Lots of design features to help with energy conservation. And, many days we don't even turn on the lights. There's so much natural light.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's a welcoming space. People, when they come in the building, they are always like, wow, this is really a beautiful space. And it really is. We're designed to take advantage of looking at the beautiful landscape that we're situated in. So we're looking out over the Rojan Kill so people can sit there and read and enjoy that view. That's the history in a nutshell. This year, we've expanded a bit by building a new pavilion outdoors to take advantage of our space and the outdoor environment here. We have a new pavilion that we are having a ribbon cutting for on May 9th. So we're looking forward to being able to have a lot of programming outside as well. And that was designed to look very much like the library itself. It reflects it. It looks like a little mini library right next door. So we're looking forward to using that a lot this summer. I know your library building is much, much older. So
it's, well, 20 years, but very different style. Yes.
Let me just ask you quickly,
when did the library start to serve three towns instead of just Hillsdale? How did that come about?
I wish I had that on the top of my head, but it's in the late 90s.
Did they have their own libraries first, Ankrum and Copaig?
No, they did not. No.
Their patrons
were
able to.
They had no chartered library, and so our charter was expanded to include those three towns. There are still towns around us who don't have chartered libraries, and a lot of those people use our library as well. But partly it was just a lot of this area of the county did not have a chartered library, so ours was expanded to incorporate much of that area.
Interesting. Yeah, our history is very different. It's, sort of a storied building, incredible architecture. People travel here to see our building that was built in 1893. And it also has our history has a little bit of a soap opera to it as well. It's kind of interesting. So we're called the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. That's our official name. And we were endowed, the building itself was endowed and paid for by a woman named Mariah Bissell Hotchkiss. She was married to Benjamin Berkeley Hotchkiss, who was a member of the Hotchkiss family in Sharon Valley, just down below the hill from where we're situated in Sharon, very close to the New York line, to the Amenia border. And they were the family that owned the Hotchkiss Ironworks Company that was very well known. And they were founded in the 1820s and were well known for many inventions, cannonballs, munitions. It's said that the Hotchkiss family contributed more ammunition to the Civil War for the Union than any other company that manufactured ammunition. So very well-known company. People are always surprised when they come to Sharon that it didn't always look like it does now, that it was actually a real industrial center, this part of Connecticut, the northwest corner, because of the iron that they were able to mine. And the forests here are not original. They were clear-cut to make charcoal for the iron making process. So that's where the money for the library originally came from. The backstory, however, is that in about the 1860s, around the time of the Civil War, the company was developing some new kinds of munitions, some guns, some repeating arms, things that would eventually lead to the development of repeating arms like in the machine gun. And the company moved from Sharon to Hartford. Some places, some sources say, people always say he went to Bridgeport. I don't know. I think it was Hartford that Benjamin Berkeley Hotchkiss went to. And the U.S. government was not interested in having the new technology they had developed. So he moved to France in 1867 along with his ideas, and he started a weapons and munitions plant there, and he developed a revolving barrel machine gun known as the Hotchkiss gun, which became very popular there. And what happened in the meantime is he asked the original Mariah Hotchkiss for a divorce because he had taken up with his secretary, also named Mariah, in Hartford or Bridgeport, whichever place it actually was. And the first Mariah Hotchkiss said, absolutely not. And so for the rest of their lives, they remained married but separated, and he actually married, I guess, illegally, this woman in France, and they had a child, and he was never reconciled with the original Mariah. But when he died, she inherited 50% of his estate. It was a long battle. This was in the 1885 when he died, and there were technicalities in his will, and his family fought it. The woman in Paris received nothing, and she received half of his estate, which we believe was valued over $2.5 million at the time. And she became one of the wealthiest women in the Northeast. And within a few years, she wanted to do things to help the towns where she was from. She lived in Sharon, but she had grown up just over the border in Lakeville, close to where she would also endow the give the seed money for what is now the Hotchkiss School, also named for the family. And that she did a year before she came to the town of Sharon and said she would like to build a library. There's a myth in town that we received the library because Salisbury and Lakeville already had a library, Scoville, which is one of the oldest libraries in the United States. I don't know if that's really true, but they said she wanted to do one school and one library, but whatever the reason, we ended up with this beautiful building. She was very involved in the process. She chose Bruce Price as the architect. He was a well-known architect who designed buildings in the sort of tradition of Henry Hobson Richardson from the previous generation. He is well known for the hotels that he built along the Canadian Railroad. He famously designed the Chateau Frontenac, which is the famous hotel in Quebec City that looks like a chateau. He designed many of the buildings at Yale, and he also designed many of the houses and the library in Tuxedo Park, New York, which was a vacation community in Orange County, New York. And some of those early buildings of his looked very much like our library. Another fun fact about him is that his daughter, Emily Price, grew up to marry a man with the last name of Post, and she became Emily Post. So there are all kinds of interesting connections to our history. She was really involved with the building. She came up, she was living in New York in the Plaza Hotel towards the end of her life, and she would come up to Sharon to check on the progress. She didn't like the marble that had been chosen, the stone, and she twice rejected the stonework that had begun and had it all taken out. And the building is built with what is called Stockbridge marble. It's a vein of granite that runs down into northwest Connecticut from the Berkshires. And it was probably, I believe, quarried up very close to where the Hotchkiss School actually is now, a little south of there, close to Sharon, the Sharon border. So she gave the money for the library, had it built. It opened in 1893, and within a year she an association was formed of citizens in Sharon who became the Hotchkiss Library Association, and she signed the building over to them. She did not purchase a collection or leave any money to maintain it, but she did give us this beautiful building that is well known and considered the best preserved Bruce Price interior in the country from all of his work. But unlike you, with your wide open spaces, we are on a very small lot on the historic Sharon Green, and we are limited with, you know, what we can do with our space. We have a very small outdoor space, very limited parking off of the street, but many attempts had been made for many years to expand the library, and that finally came to fruition, and we moved back into an amazingly restored and expanded building almost 3 years ago in August of 2023. We were out of the building in a temporary location for 2 years, and we added about 30% of our existing square footage. So we have private workspace now for the staff. We have new handicapped accessible bathrooms. We have a community room. And most importantly, the building is accessible now. The main level is about half a story off the ground, and there was no way to bring people in who were not mobile on their own to get in over the stairs. And so you can come in at grade into a new entrance and take a elevator-like lift that will bring you up to our main floor or down to our new lower-level programming room. So that is the story of Mariah. And she did very specifically name it in Benjamin Berkeley's honor and memory. There's a plaque inside engraved with his name, and we always find it fascinating that despite the way he treated her, she did want to honor his legacy. I went on a long time, but it's an interesting history.
Yeah, I find it interesting that your library, our library, many libraries are started by money from women. That's true of our pavilion as well. Our pavilion is also funded by a bequest left to us by one of our longtime patrons and supporters, Charlotte Schutz. And that's true of many libraries, I think. I used to be involved in the library in Pennsylvania where I live, and the same there. The library was begun, funded by a woman of the late 19th century, early 20th century. So we all know about Andrew Carnegie, but there are a lot of women out there helping to build libraries as well.
That's right. That's right. Very influential. That's amazing. So why don't you mention quickly, I know we don't have a lot of time, but what your patrons are reading right now?
It's still Virginia Evans, The Correspondent, still is far and away the most requested book and audiobook right now. It's really got long legs. I don't know when that's going to fall from the top spot. But other than that, we still are also seeing a lot of requests for Alan Levy's Theo of Golden. And now joining the top three is T.R.E. Jones's Kin, which just came out last month.
Yep. Yeah, those pretty much very similar here. We also have interest in the new James Patterson book, Cross and Sampson, not the latest, but a recent one, and the new John Sanford book, Revenge Prey. Mm-hmm. And what are you reading? I'm getting good ideas from you when I hear what you're reading.
Well, I don't know. I mean, right now, I just finished I think it was 2021, The Plot by Jane Hanf Corlitz.
Oh, that's a great
book. It's just a mystery thriller, a book within a book, kind of structure. It's a story of a failed writer who's like teaching at a third-rate MFA program. And one day, one of his students, who's very, I'm failing for words here, but anyway, one of his students tells him about what his project is. He's very secretive about it, but he finally confesses what story he's working on to his professor. Later, this professor, Jake, learns that this student has passed away. And so he immediately thinks, well, that story deserves to be told. So he takes it upon himself to write that novel, which becomes an immediate bestseller. He's doing the whole lecture circuit and everything. So years later, he starts receiving anonymous messages from someone who knows he is not, who accuses him of stealing the book or stealing the plot anyway. So there's a lot of discussion of who has the right to a story, who owns the story, who has the right to write a particular story. During this book, you're also learning Jake's story and trying to figure out who this anonymous person is who's sending him these threatening messages, but you're also learning what that plot is. So you get that book within a book. It's a fun read if you have the time.
I loved that book when I read it.
Yeah. How about
you? I'm currently rereading a book I read over a year ago, because our book club will be discussing it next week, and it's called Martyr with an exclamation point by Kaveh Akbar. It's a wonderful debut novel by a poet about a queer Iranian-American poet who's a recovering addict, and he's grappling with the loss of his mother and his immigration to the U.S. with his father. But what really grabs you is the writing. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's a very distinct style. They're dreams. Sometimes you don't know if it's a dream or it's reality. It's surreal. There's a lot of sort of prose poetry, you could say, different multiple narrative perspectives, and really beautiful writing. And I'm so grateful that Book Club is reading it, because it's really a book that you need to discuss with other people. It's very powerful. It's meditation on art and history and home. Many, many big topics he grapples with, but he's a great writer. I'm looking forward to that discussion next week on Tuesday. And why don't you tell us about a few of your programs you have coming up, Tammy?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we are having the ribbon cutting for our pavilion, which is very exciting. That will be on Saturday, May 9th at 2 o'clock, and the public is definitely welcome to attend. Other than that, this May, we have a lot of literature program. So looking at our calendars, like, wow, this is really literature month. And on Wednesday, we have a poetry reading by one of our local poets, Phyllis Carrito, Wednesday, May 6th. And then Phyllis, who just completed a series of poetry writing workshops in April, will be doing some memoir writing workshops in May. There's two sessions, May 13th and 27th. You're supposed to attend both because it's sort of like a little mini class. Registration is required because it is limited. You can't have, she wants to be able to give, you know, attention to all students. So we need to limit it to 12, I believe, cut off. So if you're interested, contact the library. We still do have space for that.
I would just like to mention that our annual gala and auction will be held on Saturday, June 6th, and tickets are available. It will be at a beautiful home located close to downtown Sharon, and you can get all the information about that event on our website.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.